the same page, and we're not about to get on the same page until we grapple with.
On a warm evening in August, St. Philip's Episcopal Church in Annapolis, Maryland, opened its doors to 300 angry citizens. They were there to talk about the health of the Chesapeake Bay. In the crowd is Vernice Miller Travis, vice chair of the Maryland Commission on Environmental Justice and Sustainable Communities. She's frustrated by local zoning decisions that promote development.
The folks who are in charge of local land use and zoning are not listening to what you are trying to do or where you are trying to get us to go in terms of the bay. Their interests are diametrically opposed to the interest of cleaning up the bay.
Miller Travis directs her remarks to Senior Environmental Protection Agency advisor Chuck Fox, who says getting everyone with a stake in the Bay's future to agree may require tougher regulations.
Only 40% of all sources of pollution to the Chesapeake Bay are actually regulated by the federal or state government. I don't think we'd get to a clean bay if that number stays at only 40%.
A few weeks later, outside the Chesapeake Bay Program office in Annapolis, Fox has handed 19,000 postcards from citizens demanding stronger federal action. As a top government advisor on the Chesapeake Bay, Fox knows the problems.
It is a sad state that the Chesapeake Bay today is not a whole lot better than it was 25 years ago. And that is unacceptable, and that has to change.
So do the political dynamics that have guided Bay restoration, says Howard Ernst, political scientist at the U.S. Naval Academy and author of Fight for the Bay.
How do you get people in six states and in the District of Columbia, how do you get elected officials in the more than 1,600 local jurisdictions to come together for a common cause and to do something meaningful for the Chesapeake Bay?
An effort very much like that has been led by the Chesapeake Bay Program, a federal-state partnership established in 1983 to coordinate the restoration. Its failure, Howard Ernst believes, is due to a population boom, an uneven patchwork of voluntary measures and pollution regulations, and lax enforcement of rules already on the books. Ernst says it's adding politics to the mix that has slowed recovery.
That allows pollution to go on unabated in a way that the Bay can't handle. Whether it's agriculture, whether it's steel mills, whether it's air pollution, if you leave these industries to themselves, it's in their economic best interest to dispose of their waste in public spaces like the Bay. And the only way around that is to use the considerable resources of government and its regulatory tools.
In his book, Fight for the Bay, Ernst argues those policies stem from the fact that Chesapeake activists align with either of two conflicted environmental camps. On one side are the so-called dark greens, those who see environmental protection as a basic human right.
That you have a right to clean air, clean water, and vibrant natural resources in your public spaces. And people that violate the right have to be stopped. You pass a law, you enforce it, and you make the polluters pay for cleaning up their mess.
On the other side, says Ernst, are the light greens.
And it's the idea that with really good science and with a consensus-based approach, you can overcome this contentious politics of the dark greens, and people will voluntarily do the things that are necessary to restore the bay.
Ernst contends that bay restoration has largely been a light green effort, with what he calls watered-down, feel-good policies that slow the decline of the bay, but never seem capable of actually reversing the downward trend.
And now, after 25 years, we can say with a fair degree of certainty that asking nicely and showing science is not enough to change people's behavior.
Ernst says restoration requires laws, regulations, and enforcement policies, a renewed dark green approach. U.S. Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Lisa P. Jackson says her agency is taking those steps under a presidential executive order to restore and protect the Chesapeake Bay.
It's not to say that only the federal government, that the federal government acting alone could see the cleanup happen, but we have to show that leadership, and we also have to show the willingness to enforce with states, with different sectors, if necessary.
Jackson says EPA could withhold federal funding or stop permits on new projects should states fail to meet pollution reduction targets.
I believe that that's what the president wanted when he issued the executive order. He called for bold, dramatic action. If we respond with anything less, then I think skepticism is warranted. But I think that what we've done is try to outline that kind of path-breaking game changer for the Bay.
That plan will be issued in 2010 after a period of public review. At the same time, Chesapeake Bay legislation is making its way through the U.S. Congress that would give the federal government more regulatory enforcement power, initiate a pollution trading system, and provide more than $1.5 billion in grants for water management projects.
I'm certainly aware that Senator Cardin and others are advancing legislation that closely mirrors a lot of the things that advocates have called for the Bay. And so I think that there's reason to be, if not optimistic, hopeful that we'll see a different result from this effort.
But advocates fear that the 2010 midterm congressional elections will put into office lawmakers opposed to strong federal regulations and enforcement and slow progress on the newly energized cleanup. In the end, the policies that can save the Chesapeake Bay have always hinged on the changing winds of American politics. Roseanne Skirball, VOA News, Washington.